This episode of Legion of News is made possible by our friends at Squires Electric, a brand new business partner. Squires Electric is a full-service electrical contractor for all of your residential and commercial needs. You can contact them at 503-252-1609, or for more information, go to squireselectric.com.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
High atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Oregon rejects medical marijuana retailers. Washington says no to taxes on candy and soda, and San Francisco bans Happy Meals.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, gird your loins, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Wednesday, November 3rd, 2010. Republicans took control of the House and expanded their power in the Senate in Tuesday's midterm elections in a sweeping reversal of Democratic gains 2 years ago, reports the New York Times. Voters, spurred by economic unease and mistrust of the government, threw out Democrats across the country and tipped the balance of government rightward for the final 2 years of President Obama's term in office. Despite the Republican resurgence, Democrats managed to maintain control of the Senate, with Democratic leader Senator Harry Reid of Nevada fighting off a challenge by Tea Party Republican Sherrod Engel. In California, Delaware, Connecticut, and West Virginia, Democratic incumbents staved off Republican rivals. Still, Republicans captured six Democratic seats in the Senate, with candidates Marco Rubio of Florida and Rand Paul of Kentucky joining the chamber in the mark of the Tea Party's movement's power.
Marco.
Polo. Oh,
no,
wait, no.
Fail.
No. Rubio.
Oh.
Rubio, sorry.
That would have been so humorous if only it had been done correctly.
I know.
All right. Yeah. That's fine.
He's going to be around for a while, though. He's the And he's in Florida, so there'll be a lot to talk about, I'm sure. It's just, we can count the moments until the scandal.
This is going to be one of those days already, though, where there's just, because half the things aren't decided yet, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's not just in Oregon. There's a whole bunch of places where there's still just, there's counting votes. And there's that thing that's in Alaska where the chick is running as a write-in candidate because they rejected her back in the primary. The Republican candidate tried to run. If I've got this correct, she's either a Tea Party candidate or a Republican candidate, but I do believe she was actually running. I believe she was running as a Republican, but the party rejected her in the primary in August, so she just ran as a write-in candidate. And now has, by the time I went to bed last night, had achieved such a massive number of votes that they were now saying they were going to have to do the ever-popular hand recount, which is where they just put a bunch of senior citizens in a room, and they just stay in there for like 3 weeks until they come out clutching a fistful of sheets and announcing the winners. So we're going to have lots of fun for weeks and weeks to come.
Well, Oregon voters weighed in on seven ballot measures. We approved Measure 70, which makes home loans from the Oregon War Veterans Fund available to more veterans. Measure 71, which requires the Oregon legislature to meet every year instead of every other year. Measure 72, which authorizes exceptions to the state's $50,000 borrowing limit for certain projects funded by bonds. And Measure 76, which continues dedicating 15% of lottery proceeds to parks, beaches, wildlife habitat, and watershed protection. We said no to Measure 73, which would create mandatory minimum sentences for a third drunk driving conviction or a second conviction of serious sex crimes.
Who's opposed to... Okay, fine.
I have no idea.
Fine. Whatever.
Okay.
What? Mandatory minimum sentences for drunk drivers and sex criminals.
Drunk driving is part of the cultural imperative, apparently. It's a thing to which you were just allowed as part of your pioneer spirit here in Oregon.
That and sex crimes, apparently.
Well, you got to do, you got to do something to take your mind off the drunk driving charge.
We also said a big no to Measure 75, which would have allowed investors to build Oregon's first privately owned casino in eastern Multnomah County.
So we're for drinking, and apparently for sex crimes, we're opposed to gambling and more weed.
Right, and that's the other thing.
Who can't say we're a mercurial people here?
We also voted down a proposal to allow the recreational use of marijuana, authorize a network of state-licensed retailers to sell marijuana to patients authorized to use the drug legally.
And it was actually us in California both, because California kicked down Proposition 19, which really legitimately surprised me. That was honestly surprising, not because everybody in California is a big, just a big hophead, which they are, by the way, but just because they have this stupid broken economy, like way worse than the rest of the country even, and you figure there's no sure route to profitability than drugs. I mean, I think that's one thing we've all learned as the 20th century became the 21st. Really, narcotics of all varieties, that's your key to financial stability right there. If you're planning for your family's retirement, I urge you now to become a drug maven of some kind.
Just invest in marijuana dispensaries.
Don't you wish there was just like some other country offered a mutual fund where it was just like in blow that they sold to Americans?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm invested in Halliburton. What's the difference? I mean, it's just a matter of degrees at that point.
Well, with 77% of the precincts reporting, 58% voted no and 42% voted yes on Measure 74. Supporters of the measure say all they wanted to do was introduce the idea to the public, and they promise it'll be back on the ballot again in 2012 in California, as well as other states. But legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin has his doubts.
What is the name of this? Prop 19?
Prop 19.
Yes, it put it on the agenda, but it is a long way from legalization or even decriminalization at the federal level. There is no substantial movement, particularly in this new Congress, to legalize marijuana.
Yeah, this is about the California
That's Prop 19.
Right.
Yeah.
Stephen Gutwillig of the Pro-Marijuana Drug Policy Alliance promised that the issue will be back in California.
I think you're going to see in 2012 a very big presidential election year, a number of Prop 19s in a couple of states that are going to be determined in the next year, probably Western states, and California is definitely in the mix.
I did see the obligatory, the guy heading the anti-Prop 19 crusade in California, which is sort of was this coalition of, you know, law enforcement agents and blue hairs and tight asses and whatever. But the guy who was spearheading the anti-Prop 19 effort in California did the... It's like they hadn't... They'd announced it like 0.2 seconds earlier. Like the guy on TV had barely gotten the Prop 19 defeated, and immediately the guy who was campaigning against it got on TV to give his, like, "We have triumphed over a plant" thing. And first thing out of his mouth, "And if they think this is going to be back in 2012, they're smoking something."
Wow. He couldn't wait to pull that one out.
The irony is you would really have to be unbelievably high to have found that funny at all. So there's a little bit of a cyclical kind of a Mobius strip thing happening there humor-wise.
Well, this fellow Gutwillig says he's
this
not...
This fellow Gutwillig. You sound like you're on Matlock right now giving a deposition. But this fellow Gutwillig, he come by and say he needs some lime.
He says he's not discouraged.
Not that he needs lime.
No.
Okay.
He's not discouraged.
We always knew that this would be an uphill battle, particularly in a midterm election cycle with a smaller, older, more conservative electorate. But even in defeat, Proposition 19 has clearly moved marijuana legalization into the mainstream.
The best thing is, you know, if you were trying to get Proposition 19 passed and you need to console yourself, you kind of already know the method by which you can best do that. Hey, am I right, kids? Hey. Wow.
Well, here in Oregon, all we really wanted to do was create a new option for patients to get their medical marijuana.
Yeah.
Because under the current law,
that's crazy.
They can grow their own pot or designate someone to grow it for them, but they can't pay for it. So,
well, and also,
we just wanted dispensaries for this thing that people are being, prescribed by physicians.
But see, now we're arguing about the horse after the horse has left. The horse has already gone to the glue factory and been put on the back of a construction paper, the project done by school children in another state. So it's That's the tricky thing about it is that it's actually, they can't even prescribe it in Oregon. All they can do is recommend. Doctors in Oregon, they use the term, and I only know this because I interviewed the prop or the Measure 74 guy, and I asked him. I said they brought a doctor along to explain the medical underpinnings of it, and I said so you can prescribe medical marijuana, and he actually said something really that I didn't know, which is that people use those terms interchangeably, the prescribe and recommend, but he said you actually cannot prescribe because it is still illegal to go buy it, and you can't, and a prescription also indicates that it is approved for medical use, which it is not by the federal government. It's still a Schedule I drug. So doctors can recommend, and I said, well, what's the difference? What do you mean, you know, prescribe, recommend? He goes, well, prescribe, I give you a slip, and you take it to the guy, and the guy gives you some weed. You know, you go to the pharmacy. He said, recommend, you've got like 75-year-old mothers standing on street corners looking around because they don't really know where to buy any weed and they need some. And that was the whole motivation for this.
Yeah.
Is you get people, you know, my mom is out there just trying to find out where to buy a dime bag of something. And of course, she's not people who knows people. And then she ends up hanging out of the bowling alley, you know, talking to a guy named Hector who thinks, you know, that his cousin who's like, you know, hanging out in a Torino down the street is going to be able to help her out with something. And that doesn't work.
No.
Because, you know, Hector just fronts all the time.
It would be the opportunity for your mother to meet some new and interesting people.
Or to get into hoeing.
Yeah, or just improve her bowling game.
I suppose.
There's that as well.
She could probably play some pinball while she's there. Because bowling alleys are great places to play pinball.
I was trying to work on a wear my dinner thing right there. And I just couldn't. I was trying to wedge it in way too early. Yeah. It'll come.
No,
it'll happen naturally.
It'll happen.
Hey, you're listening to. We should just start calling this Wear My News. You're listening to Legion of News. Hear your news, my friends. At Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Wednesday? Yes, Wednesday.
It is indeed.
Coming up later this hour, we have Science on the March. Also, entertainment news. Don't forget, you can get this program via iTunes. Also, on your handheld or mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm. Later on in the day, we'll have the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemerson.com. We'll talk more about that. This show also can be gotten as an MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. This is Don Taylor.
I would like to add, by the way, I have actually been doing that now that I am an iPhone owner.
You've been doing what?
I
downloading or the iTuning?
There's an app for Cascadia FM.
Yes, there is.
Which basically just takes you to the webpage where you say listen live. But still, it's like a little button on my iPhone now where I Cascadia FM, and it comes to the thing, I can listen live. Yes, I will. And on my way to work, I was listening to Carton Fat Boy this morning. I've listened to Robert Wagner and Sabrina Miller on Suck It Radio on my iPhone.
It's a glorious age, Don.
I love living in the future.
It really is. No. Now is great. Yesterday sucks. Now is awesome. That's really what that is the abiding lesson that you can take from this program is that the past is terrible. This morning, better than yesterday. This afternoon, better than this morning.
Well, Democrat John Kitzhaber and Republican Chris Dudley are locked in a tight race for governor in Oregon after a big spending campaign that pitted a political veteran against a former professional basketball player.
They should totally just have to get in the middle of the town and beat each other with socks filled with manure.
Yeah, it should be like a Rock'em Sock'em Robots thing. One is blue, one is red.
Awesome.
They should just punch each other until only one is standing. Although I think if that was the case, it would be Chris Dudley.
See, I don't think so. Kitzhaber looks like a bastard. That's the thing. He looks like a guy who fights dirty.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing. If it's like extreme full body
street fighting,
you know, like street fighting, then yeah, I think Kitzhaber could take him. If we're playing, you know, Marcus of Queensbury rules or something, though, Dudley's just gonna pummel him.
Okay. Remember to rub your body with soft Turkish towels.
Wednesday morning, with more than 1.2 million votes counted, Dudley led Kitzhaber by one percentage point and about 18,000 votes. But Kitzhaber remains cautiously optimistic, with votes in heavily Democratic Multnomah County still to be counted. So we will find that out possibly later today.
Is the entire state's vote by mail, right?
Yeah.
That's it. People aren't handing these in. It's not like in some other, some far-flung county where you have to go and pull the lever or punch the thing or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why it takes, I mean, what is it? I guess we're at 16 hours or something. But doesn't it seem like they have, especially in the smaller counties, just the optical, it's just the machine that goes and just reads them like a billion an hour or something?
It's still a lot of ballots.
Yeah, I suppose.
And there are, you know, people have to physically handle them.
I guess I shouldn't complain. It's elongating the drama, which is really the only thing I care about. So,
if you're taking the bus to work this week, you may think you're running an hour early. The digital clocks on some TriMet buses made the daylight saving time switch a week early and are now displaying the incorrect time.
So wait a minute. So I wonder if this is like some sort of weird like Skynet maximum overdrive thing that's not just limited to the iPhone. Because it happened in, because as we noted yesterday, there's that weird iPhone glitch that happened in Australia. Then it happened in London. Then a similar glitch happened here the same day, but it was like a glitch that was running backward, because instead of waking everybody up late, it was waking people up early. And then you're saying the TriMet buses have done something weird.
Yeah, the woman spokesperson for TriMet said the reader boards on some of the buses are linked to an old dispatch system that was programmed several years ago when daylight savings time ended on the last weekend of October. That dispatch system is no longer supported, and the glitch can't be fixed.
Oh, that's awesome.
So until daylight savings time actually ends on Sunday, all the low-floor buses with automatic stop announcements are going to show the wrong time on their reader board clock.
That's fantastic that it can't be fixed. There's no way to access it. So that really is like a Skynet thing. Yeah. That's where, like, they try to pull the plug, but there's no plug to be pulled.
Yeah.
That's sort of like how Greg and Sarah got locked on the roof of our studio, I don't know, a couple months back. I guess we were the first month or...
Yeah, it was the first week we were here or something.
We have this glorious rooftop patio where we go to survey the expanse of our dominion.
Mm-hmm.
Greg and Sarah got locked up there because there's a combination lock to the roof, and they let the door shut behind them, you know, accidentally realized they didn't have the code. Then they called the building owner. When they finally got down, like, hours later after this whole, like, Archie and Meathead locked in a freezer thing. So they found out that they couldn't get the combination because the company would have to give you the combination, and the company's gone out of business. And there's no way to get the lock off without knowing the combination, and there's no way to get the combination without talking to the company, which no longer exists. And so as a result, the door is just basically there until the end of time. Yeah. There's nothing that can be done.
The only thing they'd be able to do, I imagine, is just take a giant saw and just cut a big hole in the wall and just remove the whole box and rip the wires out.
And I actually
asked... Considering they're an electrical company downstairs, you'd think they would be able to do that.
I actually asked him about it. I said, well, why don't you replace the door? And he's like, hey, friend, why don't you replace the door? And I just said, okay, fair enough. Never mind.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, he wasn't going to have any of my guff.
Jerry Brown will become governor of California again. The longtime Democrat beat Republican Meg Leatherface Whitman in a hard-fought race. Whitman, the former CEO of eBay, says it's...
Meg Leatherface Whitman?
I thought I'd just slip that in there. Maybe you wouldn't notice.
Okay.
She says it's time to put the people's interests first.
This is Meg Whitman?
Yes.
She's the... She's not the HP chick.
No, she's the former CEO of eBay. She's a billionaire and a scary, scary looking person.
Would you say that she lost her bid for office?
Yes. this is her saying something.
Oh, sorry. What is this, Whitman?
Yes.
Let's see. Where did I...
My hope that a new era of bipartisan problem solving can begin tonight, because the people of California deserve no less. And tomorrow we are all Californians.
Yeah. She's proud of her campaign, she says.
Is she all like being the amazing Criswell? I mean, listen.
It is my hope that a new era of bipartisan problem solving can begin tonight, because the people of California deserve no less. And tomorrow we are all Californians.
Let us punish the guilty. Let us something the innocent. All right. I'm sorry. She's proud of...
She's proud of her
failure
campaign.
Tonight has not turned out quite as we had hoped.
Okay, that inflection of hers has got to go. You have to stop that, baby.
Tonight has not turned out quite as we had hoped.
Is she stepping on kittens?
We've come up a little short, but certainly not for lack of hard work, determination, and a clear vision for making our state better.
It actually causes me physical pain to hear her speak.
I think that may be why she lost. People just went, oh my God, I'll have to listen to her speak.
Seriously,
like the next 4 years.
There's something
that can't be.
I don't know what is up with her voice, if it's the frequency or the tone of it or something, or if it is just that downward inflection that she puts at the end of every sentence that's downward inflected yet also monotone, which is a neat trick. Wow.
No, yeah, it actually sounds like she...
Gives me hives.
...took some lessons somewhere in how to...
But I think she only read, like, half of one chapter. I think she just heard... I think she only got part of the film strip and decided that was the way she had to talk all the time about everything. My friends. All right. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, later on the program, we will have entertainment news, and at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson radio show over at rickemerson.com. We'll talk to Kelly Clark of Willamette Week. Mm-hmm. Today, we'll also talk to Anna Griffin, columnist from The Oregonian, who will give us a recap on everything that happened at last night. So, Anna Griffin from The Oregonian, Kelly Clark of Willamette Week, and more whimsy than you could shake a stick-making factory at. And that's all coming up at rickemerson.com.
We also have a Geek Watch watch and a snuff watch.
Is that true?
Yes. I haven't written them on the board yet, but yes.
You have not written them on the board yet. Not going to stop her. That's just going to be a thing I start doing. Are you talking about the same snuff watch that I'm talking about?
Is it someone who...
Worked on a three-word program?
Yes.
All right. There we go.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Here's Don Taylor.
Oh, I thought you were going to a thing. Anyway, you just keep me guessing, Rick Emerson.
I keep you off kilter.
Keep me on my feet. Washington state voters have rolled back new taxes on candy, gum, soft drinks, bottled water, and some processed foods. Initiative 1107 was winning by about 63% to 37% in unofficial returns. More than half the expected votes had been counted. The taxes were part of a package of hikes the Washington legislature approved earlier this year to help avoid deeper cuts in state spending. The repeal campaign was led by the National Soda Lobby's American Beverage Association, which contributed almost all of the effort's nearly $16.8 million treasury.
John Munch could not be reached for comment.
Opponents were vastly outspent. They raised less than $500,000 from unions, health clinics, and others who rely on the state spending bankrolled by the tax increases.
Interesting. Now, where was this? Washington?
Yeah, Washington State.
It makes you wonder. I mean, this probably isn't the case, but it makes you wonder if that was part of the reason that Law and Order SVU thing.
Probably.
A couple weeks ago, it was all about the soda lobby, where they had iced tea talk about, you know, the dangers of aspartame are such that, you know, just for no readily apparent reason.
Yes, and we learned that soda kills kids because this one woman, her son had committed suicide, and she had cannily put together that he drank a lot of cola. I tried to get him off the cola, she says, and that the soda makes kids fat, and when you're fat, you're sad. And then when you're sad, you kill yourself.
Did you?
So therefore, the soda killed him.
Did you really say that she put this together cannily?
Yes.
Okay.
Cannily.
All right.
But, I also realized, when we talked about that on the show, I also failed to mention that I realized later, that entire scene with the mom whose kid killed himself had nothing to do with the case they were working on.
No, of course not.
She wasn't a witness. She didn't know the people involved. She was just some random woman that Mariska Hargitay went to talk to so she could say, soda killed my son.
Just something they had sitting in a drawer from a previous episode
yeah.
that had to stick in. You are listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. I was going to say that if you're stuck on the roof of a studio, with Sarah Dillon, and you can't quite ring up anybody on the phone, and you end up tossing your key card off the side of the building, only to have it land on the awning below, and you continue to be stuck upstairs, you can call Squires Electric. But apparently, they're not. They probably won't. If it involves replacing a door, they're gonna. My guess would be they'll just tell you to do that your own self. If it does require anything that needs adjusting in your wiring, whether it's your electrical wiring, your Ethernet wiring, whether it's any of the cabling in your home or a home that has just recently become yours, which is when this happens a lot. As you head into your very first summer, you head into your first winter, it's like the first time it breaks 90 degrees or whatever, and you kick on your air conditioner, and then there's that moment of just, it's like an ice road truckers when they're getting ready to cross some new expanse of frozen water, and everybody kind of stops for a second and just waits to hear the telltale sound of cracking just to see if it's all going to go poorly. So it is, you turn on your air conditioner, and you realize you haven't really checked to see what else is running in the house. And you're kind of too lazy to do it, and so you just sit there for a second and wait to see if all the power goes off. So it is with wintertime. You head into winter. You start turning on the heater everywhere. You got the light display going out front, including that little articulated wicker Rudolph that, like, just tilts its head back and forth or whatever. Plus, you got the Christmas tree going on, and then everybody else on the block is doing this. So you can probably see your block from space at this point. And you just don't want it to fry your wiring, downstairs and to blow out all the fuse boxes and whatever, especially because then... I mean, bad enough you do it in the summer. The winter time, you have to be padding around in the basement. It's like 50 below, and you're just sitting in there in your underwear, and it's you don't want to do that. So just have your wiring looked at and taken care of in advance. And if you've got a problem, if you've got a smoke damage, water damage, fire damage, or if you're maybe getting a brand new house or an office, just make sure the wiring is done right the first time. Squires Electric can do that. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical contractors. 503-252-1609. Free estimates, 503-252-1609. Here's Don Taylor.
Do you find a launch of Space Shuttle? Oh. It's time for science news. I should say that ahead of time.
Okay. Here's your science news.
I start talking and I don't hear the majestic science music and I realize...
Something's wrong.
Something's terribly wrong.
All right, here we go. Awesome.
The final launch of Space Shuttle Discovery has been delayed again, this time because of an electrical problem. NASA decided early yesterday evening to bump the liftoff until at least Thursday. The decision came less than 24 hours before the scheduled launch today. The space agency has until Sunday, possibly as late as Monday, to send Discovery to the International Space Station. Otherwise, it will have to wait until December because of sun angles. Gas leaks had already forced a two-day postponement for Discovery's last trip into orbit. Launch director Mike Leinbach said, "Discovery is not going out easy. She's giving us a little bit of trouble, but that's fine. She'll fly perfectly when she does." Children do not see objects in a fully grown-up way until the age of 13, a new study shows. When judging whether shaded images are convex or concave, adult brains assume that light comes from above unless there's reason to think otherwise. Young children have to learn this ability. To investigate when this happens, Jim Stone at the University of Sheffield in the UK showed embossed shapes such as squares and shaded images such as footprints to 171 children aged 4 to 10. Each child was shown 10 images and asked whether they were convex or concave.
Wait a minute, which is which? Convex is out and concave is in?
Yes.
All right.
The correct answer assumed an object was lit from above. The children got better with age, with an average score out of 10 improving by 0.43% each year. If children of other ages develop at the same rate, Stone predicts that babies will learn to assume that light comes from above at about 21 months. But this aspect of their visual perception won't be fully grown until the age of 13 or so.
I hate to rain on the science parade and everything, but I mean, what is the point of this study? Can't you just... Here's the thing. Can't you just figure where the light is by just looking around and going, oh that's right there. Oh, it's on the ceiling. Yeah, I thought it was on the floor. No, it's up there.
Well, you can after a certain age.
No, but no, see, that's not what it's saying, though. The study is saying that based upon the shadowing of an object, they can determine from where the light is coming without actually seeing the light itself. Just the shadowing and the shape of the object and whether it is concave or convex, they can determine the source of the light without actually seeing the source of the light. And I'm saying, the light's right there. It seems like you're talking about half a second differential between when you figure it out, you know? Why are we... I'm not upset at you, you understand? You're just the messenger. I'm just saying, this is a guy whose grant should have been turned off about 100 years ago. It's a lab that has just been left running to study something we don't need.
It's a study that confirms that... perceptions are variable when you are a child. And then as you become older,
well, you got a tiny brain.
Your perceptions become more concrete.
I'm just saying it doesn't seem like really groundbreaking research to say, like, and the more, you know, the older you are, the more stuff you know and things you can figure out. That'll be $10 million, please.
So, some ads on websites you visit could soon be impossible to ignore, as they will be integrated into the CAPTCHAs used to check whether site visitors are human.
That's freaking brilliant.
Thank you.
Wow, well done.
With many web users using tools to block online advertisements, companies must find new ways to get their message across. Software firm New CAPTCHA, based in Vancouver, Canada, believes the answer lies in CAPTCHAs as they require a user's full attention to solve them.
That is awesome. Whoever came up with that needs a raise, like right now.
The firm has created New CAPTCHA Engage to exploit this. Instead of the traditional squiggly word that users have to decipher, the new system shows them a video advertisement with a short message scrolling across it. The user has to identify and retype part of the message to proceed. Companies including Electronic Arts, Wrigley, and Disney have already signed up.
Oh, that's genius. We don't really have a need for that over the Rick Emerson Show, but I kind of wish we did just so we could start doing it.
Yeah.
Just because it's sort of insidious and evil and great.
Go see the Lion King. All right, I'll type in go see the Lion King.
I admire people who find new and ingenious ways to take the money of others. I mean, that really is something superhero, supervillain thing where there's a grudging respect.
Yeah.
You know, sort of a once again we meet. You know, it's like an Indiana Jones and Belloc kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And by the way, just confidential to everyone, quit typing messages to the effect that you want to be trapped in some small enclosed space with Sarah Dillon, especially the guy who keeps typing yummy after that. Just
what is this new to this morning, or is this just like all the time?
It was because I referenced the roof thing, being trapped
on
the roof with Sarah, and so I'm getting a lot of, like, I know where I'd like to be trapped with Sarah. It's off-putting.
That's please, inappropriate. Colder weather could put your baby at risk. The National Institute of Child Health and Human Development says there's a greater risk of sudden infant death syndrome during winter months, as Dr. Marion Willinger explains.
Studies have shown that overheating is associated with sudden infant death syndrome, and parents tend to put on more blankets and clothes in the wintertime.
This is one of those things where they just don't know, and so every year we get the best guess as to what they think caused. First, it was don't sleep on the, you know, put them on their back. Then don't put them on their front. Then don't put them on their side.
And don't bundle them up too tight. Don't get them too warm.
I mean, I'm not trying to make light of it. I'm just saying it's like Alzheimer's, you know, because there's no test for Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is just a thing they arrive at, like when they've run out of everything else, and so it is for SIDS. Yeah.
They're newborn baby animals. You know, sometimes they just don't make it.
Sometimes nature just ends things a little early.
Willinger says parents tend to overcompensate when trying to keep their child warm.
The National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
Oh, that's totally the wrong cut there. I'm sorry. That meant to be Willinger 2 something?
Overheating is...
No, I got nothing. I'm sorry. That's my fault. That is totally my failure.
Okay.
I have brought shame on my whole family and your family, too, by the way.
Maybe William Barucki has something to say about this.
It's entirely... Oh, now the whole computer is just disobeying me. It's just... It's angered at my sloth and my incompetence, so it's just refusing to cooperate.
We need to look through these candidates with ground-based telescopes and find out which are really... planets, and which aren't.
All right.
Well, I think this will especially interest you, Rick Emerson. Alzheimer's disease may begin in a particularly vulnerable area of the brain and then further spread its damaging effects to other regions, according to a new study researchers conducted in mice. The brain region, known as the entorhinal cortex, is part of a circuit that is crucial for memory. Researchers had previously suspected this region was affected early on in Alzheimer's disease. The new study suggests that plaques, called amyloid beta peptides, which build up in the brains of patients with Alzheimer's and damage memory, may spread to the rest of the brain from this one particular region. This finding could help researchers design new therapies for the disease. The entorhinal cortex, I can't say this, entorhinal cortex. They should give science things easier names.
That's it. You know, here's what they ought to do. I was just thinking about that. You know what they ought to do with things like this? They ought to have, like, where there's the drug name, you know, which is the thalaxamide seravismus, you know, VSC, HLC, hydrochloride.
And then they call it fun pill.
Exactly. Yeah. And they just call it, like, Hickson. You know, or whatever. That's totally what they have to do with these diseases.
Well, this cortex thingy is connected to another brain region called the hippocampus. And interference with this connection may contribute to the memory loss seen in the early stages of Alzheimer's. So, and there's more about this that you can find in the November 4th issue of the journal Neuron, which I know you all read.
So the end of science?
That's the end of science.
There you go. There's your science news.
Not forever. Just right now.
There's your science news for Wednesday right here at Legion of News. Don't forget, coming up later on today, the Rick Emerson Show, we have a snuff watch and a... I'm sorry, what was the other watch we have today?
Geek
Taser?
Watch.
No, right. Geek Watch, snuff watch. Also, Anna Griffin from The Oregonian and Kelly Clark from Willamette Week will be joining us here on the Emerson News Network studios. This is Legion of News. Coming up later on this hour, we have your entertainment news for you, and you can also get this program as a download here or at Cascadia.fm or via iTunes. This is Don Taylor.
A day after the Giants won the World Series, San Francisco made news again by becoming the first city in the country to ban Happy Meals. One day you're world champions, and the next day, no toys for you, lamented Daniel Conway.
On Happy Meals only.
Spokesman for the California Restaurant Association.
What do you mean they banned Happy Meals?
Under the new ordinance, restaurants are forbidden from offering free toys with meals containing more than certain amounts of calories, sugar, and fat, and are required to include fruits and vegetables with meals that do come with toys.
Seriously, that whole place ought to just be burned down and paved.
Despite running into opposition from San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom, the City Board of Supervisors passed the measure with enough votes to override a veto, and the policy will go into effect next January. We're part of a movement that is moving forward an agenda of food justice, beamed City Supervisor Eric Barr.
To quash fun and happiness from sea to shining sea.
Unsurprisingly, McDonald's officials did not agree. Public opinion continues to be overwhelmingly against this misguided legislation, said spokeswoman Dania Proud.
You know, rare is the day when I find myself on the same side of the aisle as McDonald's, ideologically speaking, but I mean seriously, for the love of Christ.
Parents tell us that it's their right and responsibility, not the government's, to make their own decisions and choose what's right for their children.
The funny thing is that really, we were just yesterday, so it's a little bit of backstory. So yesterday on the Rick Emerson Show, we did the top five songs about a politician, top five songs about real life politicians. And number three, I think, was California Uberalis by the Dead Kennedys, which was about then and future governor, Jerry Brown, about whom we'll talk more later on. But But as we noted yesterday, the really great thing about the song California Uber Alles is that Jerry Brown, then as now, was a really, really liberal, progressive politician. Especially for 1975 or whenever it was, yeah, he first got into office. I mean, he was really, really ahead of the curve in being a liberal. And so Jella Biafra had this whole genius of not writing a song about a conservative politician, but writing a song about, wait for it, because I know that this will seem like a sort of fantasy world that could never actually take place. These are insane eventualities which could never actually come to pass here in the United States. It was about a progressive politician who just like forcibly shoves his ideals onto the rest of California and onto the citizens therein, regardless of whether or not the citizens actually want these things. So, well, not that that takes place in places like San Francisco, apparently.
Interestingly, the Happy Meal vote was held on the same day that McDonald's reintroduced the McRib.
You know, can I just tell you how many emails I got that all just said, some of them with like a little bracketed gasp, and just said, McRib is back. I actually had two or three people send me text messages just with a photograph of a McDonald's that said, McRib is back, on the side. The irony is that I have long ago lost the actual soundbite of Jack Osborne saying, McRib is back, which prompted that entire thing. So I don't even know where that went.
You know, I have never actually eaten a McRib sandwich.
Me either.
I've never had one.
Are they back here in Portland, or is it just like...
I think they're everywhere for a limited time. They are described here in the end of the story, by the way, as a pressed pork patty that gets half its calories from fat and has a cult-like legion of fame.
Here's the thing. That is really true because, A, I saw a story, it was like on CNN or Yahoo or something, and it said it described them as being calorie-laden. There was another story that described them as being unbelievably calorie-filled. They do have a huge, huge cult following, and I think I've mentioned this before, that whenever they go on sale, which is like once a year or something, I think it's like those Shamrock Shakes.
Yeah, I don't even think it's once a year. I don't know.
It's like an every now and again thing, though. It's a recurrent menu item, but I mean, not very often. But my father-in-law will go to McDonald's, and he'll buy like 100 of them. And then I swear to God, he just puts them in the freezer and then thaws them and toasts them again over the course of the ensuing 365 days or whatever it is, gradually eats them over but he spaces it out. You know, it's like it's like rations in a, it's like rations in a mine.
You know, he could, I don't know, eat actual pork ribs.
Well, what's the point of that, Don? I think you're missing the overarching reason one goes to McDonald's. Mm.
Anyway,
they ought to make food that actually just is shaped like a toy. That should be their response to this. Or edible toys. You know what I mean? Which sounds like the same thing. There's two different sides of the same coin. You could just make a hamburger that is shaped like a football or something. You could just, instead of making it out of like high impact polymer, you just make it out of high impact sugar. Where it is a fully functional toy that at the end you can just put it in your gullet and eat it.
Well, there's a commercial right now for Rice Krispies where it shows a happy mom and two or three small children making Rice Krispie squares and then molding them by hand into like holiday shapes.
Or like a gingerbread house or something?
Something, they're like molding them into angels and things, I guess, for Christmas or something. But it's like small children, like 5 or 6-year-old children, squishing the Rice Krispies into shapes. And then I'm thinking, and then the shows at the end of the commercial, them all laid out on a plate. And I'm like, and are you going to serve those to others? Because those have been smashed into shape by small children's sticky bacteria-laden hands.
Just molded by a bunch of little nose miners.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, really? It's like, no, wrong.
Do not want.
No.
You're listening to Legion of News. I hadn't really thought about that. Thanks for bringing that point.
I'm horrified every time I see that.
Oh, God. Well, you know, you've worked in kitchens. I mean, you know, half the time in there, some guy doesn't have time to reach for a Kleenex, and so it's just the back of the hand, if you're lucky.
Oh, I know. People seem to think that they go to restaurants and that their food is prepared in some kind of a sterile laboratory-like environment.
In an Intel clean room.
And it's like, no, it's a bunch of greasy, sweaty guys cooking food.
Dropping things on the floor and then just scraping off the larger bits.
As fast as possible, under a lot of pressure and swearing a lot.
Well, I mean, and let's be honest. I mean, here's the... Not that I care about this, because, I mean, I did it and I turned out fine. But if we're going to have an entire culture based on eating cookie dough, which is, filled with raw eggs, It seems like at that point the disease thing is really, I mean, you're really just, you know, you're on borrowed time regardless. If you are listening to this program right now and saying to yourself, what a fantastic slice of entertainment this is.
There's
something almost physically wrong with you if you're not doing that. You want to thank folks such as Castalia Language Center. They are based in downtown Portland. You can find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. And what they do is they offer Spanish language classes for adults. So you can leave your grubby fingered children at home. Leave them; they can be left to their own devices while you get yourself some education in terms of a second language, third language, whatever it is. Maybe you've actually already had some Spanish education in your background, or maybe you speak it somewhere between well and fluently. You just want to you polish up on your skills. You want to be able to hone your conversational abilities ever so slightly.
Or Luis Pequeño?
Exactly. Whatever that might mean. I would be starting at the ground level. See, that's the thing. I will be starting on I will be at step one. Whereas many other people, they already have, they're like you, Don, where clearly they're just inches away from having a mastery of the tongue.
Oh, yeah.
You can find out more about Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. It is classes for adults only, so you are learning at the same way, the same rate as other adults. They hold class sizes to no more than 8 people, which means if you are learning at with near individual attention, they can find something that works with your schedule and that meshes with the days and the times that you are available. Find out more at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. It is Castalia Language Center. This is Don Taylor.
Video surveillance images led to the arrest of a Washington man accused of pouring soda on the floor of a convenience store so he could stage a slip and fall accident. Charles Barnes Sr., 48, of State Street in Auburn, was arrested on October 20th on insurance fraud and falsifying business record charges. If convicted, he could face up to 4 years in prison. According to investigators from the New York State Insurance Department's Fraud Bureau, there's also an Auburn in New York.
So this is not Auburn, Washington?
No, this is Auburn, New York.
Okay.
Barnes deliberately poured soda onto the floor in an Auburn Express Mart. The video shows Barnes lying on the floor until customers and store employees came to his aid.
Really? Is he just sort of sitting there? Oh, it sure does hurt over here in aisle 5.
Barnes then filed a claim with Express Mart's insurer in January, saying he had sustained a back injury. He later withdrew the claim.
Okay.
Voters in up to 700,000 households who relied on Google Election Center apps to get to the polls yesterday may have found themselves at the wrong centers, according to political technology company Aristotle. The company arrived at this number by comparing polling place data to Google data for 1,000 households in key battleground states and then using the error rate to guess how many households in total were affected. In response to the charges, a Google spokesman said all of the data came directly from the Board of Elections, and the company is working to fix the problem.
It's kind of ironic that they were given incorrect answers by a company named Aristotle. I'm sorry. Let me do another one. Hold on. Hold on. So they were trying to go somewhere, but they were given the wrong route. So they had to wander the city looking for the correct polling district.
They were looking for the one honest app.
I was just gonna say, if it had been Diogenes, then that would have been. I can go all day if you want.
If you're being sent to the wrong polling place, it's a pretty big deal, said Aristotle CEO John Phillips, especially if it's toward the end of the day and especially if it's an election that's a closely contested one like 2010. There's not yet any data on how many people didn't get to vote as a result of the mishap.
By the way, that Diogenes humor, that's free there. We're not even, you know, that's just a little bonus from us to you.
We're kind of highbrow here at Legion of News.
That's right, Don.
Where my dinner?
Yeah, and I was just going to say a boob joke, and then I decided it was too obvious.
Just days before the election, it looked as if Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid might fall to Tea Party challenger Sharon Angle. Yet the tsunami of conservatism that Angle predicted would come in waves across our country never arrived in Nevada. On Tuesday, Nevada voters elected Reid.
A tsunami of conservatism? Really?
That's what she said.
I think you might want to rethink your a plague of conservatism. It just seems like that's the sort of thing you don't want to go for. That's the kind of metaphor you would like to eschew, probably.
We will drown you and kill you with our ideology.
You will be hopelessly submerged and fixed within.
On Tuesday, Nevada voters elected Reid to his fifth term in the U.S. Senate by a comfortable margin of 6 points, one of few positive notes in a devastating night for Democrats. He said, today, Nevada chose hope over fear.
I wish my voice could convey what's in my heart.
Yeah. No.
That's thank you, thank you, thank you.
We also have him saying more here during this.
You see, I've been in some pretty tough fights in my day. They've been in the street, been in a boxing ring, and they've been in the United States Senate. But I have to admit, this has been one of the toughest.
He's been in fights in the street.
I guess I have no observations to make about this. I was when he just said I've been in some pretty tough fights in my day and some scraps. I was actually going to say, you know, when me and Knuckles McGee had to go knock over the candy store in the, you know, the corner of Amsterdam and 43rd. But then he went right to the boxing ring thing. So yeah, I don't know.
Reid helped engineer Engel's election as Republican candidate, hoping her inexperience and extreme political views would make her an easy opponent. But Engel turned out to be a formidable rival, forcing Reid to push his campaign machine to its limits and batter Engel with a series of increasingly scathing TV ads. Senator John Kerry rather awkwardly trumpeted Reid's victory. He said, "Politico was wrong, Huffington Post was wrong, hell, all the pundits were wrong. Harry Reid isn't just Dracula, he isn't just Lazarus. He's our leader, and our whole caucus is thrilled that he's unbreakable and unbeatable."
He isn't just Dracula. I don't even understand that one. The Lazarus reference I at least get. What is the Dracula thing?
I guess he was saying that he was unkillable.
Well, Dracula, well, that doesn't make any sense. First of all, Lazarus wasn't unkillable. That just doesn't even hold water. If he's Lazarus...
He just doesn't...
If he's Lazarus, yeah. Then he was in fact dead... And now he's sort of... Then who's Jesus if he's Lazarus? Okay, we'll leave that one aside.
The Dracula thing just kind of...
If he's not
me.
Dracula...
No.
Who was somebody... Was somebody positing that was the case?
I don't know. It says he isn't just Dracula.
He's more than Dracula.
Just Lazarus.
He's Dracula plus.
He's Dracula and he's Lazarus and he's our leader.
Was he just going to sort of keep, you know... He's not just Cass Elliot. I mean, just throwing out references that make no sense. Okay. All right. Well, whatever.
He's not just B. Arthur.
Yeah. Okay.
He's all the Golden Girls.
Nothing to add there. Okay. He's not just Vicky from Small Wonder.
A camper has been attacked and killed by a pride of lions as he took an outdoor shower in a Zimbabwean national park. Pete Evershed, 59, who lived in the capital of Harare, was touring the Mana Pools National Park with his wife and friends on Tuesday when he was attacked by five lions while showering outside a fishing camp just meters from where the tour group pitched their tents for the night. Mr. Evershed's wife, Liz, said she called for him to hurry up because it was getting dark, but then suddenly heard her husband scream. He was found in the open shower with serious neck wounds and died later from loss of blood. Park spokeswoman Carolyn Washayamoyo said Mrs. Evershed appealed for the lions not to be killed. A request has been sent to the authority by the deceased widow for clemency for the lions, an issue still under consideration, she said.
I'm sorry, did you say there's actually an organization called Clemency for the Lions? Or was that just
no,
the nature of the appeal?
That's the nature of the appeal. Right. They're going to consider clemency for the lions.
Look, here's the thing. He's dead, right?
Yes.
He's hella dead. He's dead a long time. Okay. I don't mean to be piling on here. But human beings invented walls, you know, quite some time ago. I mean, they exist. You can put them up. You can surround things with them. It seems like maybe a shower is one of those things where maybe you don't just want to be exposed to the elements, since the elements include, you know, creatures with large slavering fangs that are going to come and kill you.
Yeah, and apparently that's part of the appeal of places like this. This is one of those...
I hope you enjoyed it.
Those places in Africa where you go and it's...
It was all you imagined.
People go to hunt and to fish, and the camps are very basic, and there's no... fencing or protection.
Close contact with nature.
Right.
All right. Okay.
Let's do some entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Wednesday, right here at Legion of News.
According to Us Weekly, Miley Cyrus's mother Tish had an affair with rocker Bret Michaels, and the news led Billy Ray Cyrus to file for divorce on October 27th.
By the way, I don't know anything about her. I don't know anything about this story. I haven't heard anything about this. This is the first moment that this is crossing my transom. But doesn't Bret Michaels look exactly like the kind of guy who would have an affair with a woman named Tish?
Yeah.
Tish with a heart over the eye.
I think we know a lot about Tish's taste in men, though. She cheats on Billy Ray Cyrus with Bret Michaels.
Which is sort of awesome, actually. I guess that just saves that scenario from being written into a future Judd Apatow film.
I feel like I need a shower just thinking about this. A Michaels rep refutes the rumors, saying there's never been an affair or a fling, and a rep for Tish also denies the coupling. The 47-year-old Michaels and Miley Cyrus collaborated on a single earlier this year titled Nothing to Lose.
Oh, that would just be creepy if he was somehow the... You don't watch Sons of Anarchy. Are you caught up? Are you watching the third season?
I'm still in the first season.
All right, because there's this whole weird George Michael Bluth, maybe Funke, like incest thing happening that this just sort of reminded me of.
Okay.
Well, all right. In any event, hey, if you had to have relations with either Billy Ray Cyrus or Bret Michaels, who would it be?
God, I guess probably Billy Ray Cyrus.
What?
He seems
the devil, you say?
He seems like he would have less diseases.
I don't really know about that. I was just thinking, like, in terms of just the grease and the smell factor, I would think Bret Michaels looks a little bit, Bret Michaels looks like he's kind of a slovenly man. I get the feeling that Billy Ray Cyrus smells good.
Yeah, see, the thing is, Billy Ray Cyrus looks like he would smell better, and, you know...
Are you just presuming that his circle of sexual partners must be necessarily minute compared to that of Bret Michaels?
Aren't most people's?
Really? Well, okay, that's a fair point. No, that's true.
And just as much as I don't really care for Billy Ray Cyrus personally or really enjoy his music in any way, I'm fairly neutral towards him as a person, whereas Bret Michaels just gives me the heebie-jeebies.
He seems actively loathsome.
Yeah.
Okay.
He just makes my skin crawl.
Here's the thing about Bret Michaels, and I really am I'm a fan of his music and his whatever, and even his terrible, terrible, terrible films, such as Letter from Death Row, for which I own the soundtrack, by the way. He kind of has that Kid Rock thing, though, where you just want to go squeegee the grease off of him.
Yeah.
He just has, and I love Kid Rock, too, but he's just one of those guys that you look at and you just kind of go, oh, no, I don't want to be in a car with him, like, even if it's just to the corner to drop him off at the Greyhound station. Like, I don't want any part of that.
Leonardo DiCaprio will star in and produce Devil in the White City, a movie based on the book by Eric Larson, which tells the story of the architect of the 1893 Chicago World's Fair and the serial killer who terrorized the event. DiCaprio will star as Dr. H.H. Holmes, the slick serial killer who covers up as a doctor and lures his victims into the World's Fair Hotel. The structure, which became known as the Murder Castle, included a basement gas chamber, crematorium, and a dissecting table. The role of Daniel H. Burnham, who built the famous fair's landscape, has not been confirmed.
And this is where in Chicago?
Yes. So I take it you haven't read this book?
No.
Oh, you should. It's awesome.
Is this a novel or is this nonfiction? I mean, did this other thing that really happened?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a novel, but it is based heavily and very well researched on actual events.
Okay. So novelization of true.
Yeah, because these two guys actually did exist and this was happening concurrently. And it's like a dual biography, really, where he's not only talking about the serial killer and what he did, which is, you know, factually accurate, but at the same time, he's alternating it with talking about the creation of the Chicago World Fair.
Yeah, see, I dig stuff like that.
It is such a good book.
I'm a huge fan of those.
It's so fascinating.
I like books that intertwine, that take the two, you know, the creation of the thing, some larger overarching. Now I've become all self-conscious about that because, you know, I always say overarching, and then somebody corrected me the other day and said it was overarching, and I contest. Now, see, now I'm just screwing that up, too. I suggest, I concur, I suggest, I can conjecture.
You propound?
I put forth the theory that they're both accurate, that they mean slightly different things, but that they're both accurate words.
Well, when I say overarching, I'm thinking of a word that I just made up for myself because I'm not thinking of overarching, which is, I think, of as a completely different word.
Overarching might be redundant, though, because it doesn't seem like an arc is really going to be underneath anything. Well, I don't know what I'm talking about. But the point is, I'm a huge fan of books like that take maybe the story of an individual man or an individual group of people, and then they intertwine it with the story of a cultural development or an organizational development sort of at large. I'm sold on. What is it called?
Devil in the White City.
Devil in the White City.
By Eric Larson. And it's beautifully written, too. It's just almost unputdownable. It's so good.
Excellent.
Michael Jackson's death isn't stopping what's being billed as a Michael Jackson tour. Cirque du Soleil and the Jackson Estate announced Michael Jackson, The Immortal World Tour on Wednesday. It's being billed as a combination of his music, thrilling choreography, and special effects.
Now that he's dead and there's nobody to say no, they ought to just replicate that thing from the Leave Me Alone video, where it's just a huge Michael Jackson that's like 9 miles in length or whatever, and you just ride around in his body like it was some sort of a like it was some sort of a huge roller coaster. You go like up his nose and then, you know, like down through his trachea.
The tour will kick off in Montreal in October 2011 and hit cities including New York, Miami, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, and Las Vegas. A select number of tickets are being sold to fan clubs of Michael Jackson and Cirque du Soleil starting today. The rest will go on sale on Saturday.
And yes, in case you were wondering, you would exit through the anus or pooper. You're listening to Legion of News right here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us today.
No, I was just going to follow that up with a story about Jean-Luc Godard. And then you said pooper.
We're a study in contrast, Don. Okay. I had to make up for the Aristotelian humor that we had earlier. It's a balance in all things, you know. Well, I was just actually going to talk about CJ's High Climbing, but they probably don't want that. Well, too late. CJsHighClimbing.com is the website for CJ's High Climbing Services. Jesus, so I know this is like the second thing in a row I'm talking about this, but how about that wind last night? It was like a tornado of leaves as I was pulling into my driveway. It was like sort of actually turning off the road onto, you know, another street that takes me to my house. And it was the thing where I suddenly became just encircled in this. It was like I was in a wearing blender into which a tree had been put.
Are you sure it's not demons?
It might be.
Because this wasn't happening where I live.
I don't know. Maybe this is like we have different weather in Southeast or something. But for a moment, it was honestly freaky for a second as I was driving along. I literally had no visibility. I mean, like past my windshield, because there were leaves just sort of going and just swirling around my car. It was kind of freaking me out a little bit.
Have you angered a scary old gypsy woman lately?
It seems likely. I mean, the answer to that, because she's probably already, you know, already known to everybody.
I swear to God, if like flies start coming out your mouth, I'm out of here.
Jody's rocking upstairs in a chair with pig eyes. Well, in any event, this already went off track, just like the level I can't even. It's 503-228-9278. That's how you get a hold of CJ's High Climbing Services, 503-228-9278. So if you've got messy, uncomfortable, unpleasant, dangerous, or exhausting tasks regarding home maintenance on the outside of your home, whether it's your roof, whether it's your porch, whether it's your lawn, whether it's the walkway, because, you know, that's the other thing. You know, we've talked about CJ's High Climbing and how it's not just, as Gary from CJ's himself said, it's not just some guy in a Geo Metro who has like a ladder bungee corded to the top of his car or something. You know, the people who work for CJ's are actually employees of CJ's High Climbing. They got workman's comp. They're covered by liabilities. You don't have to worry about that. Because, you know, you get into the winter, it's not just like the frost and the snow and the ice and the whatever. It's that conflated with all of the leaves and all of the grass clippings and all of the yard stuff and maybe all of the mold or the moss. Like, if you've already cleaned out your gutters, you've cleaned out your roof, a lot of times you just scrape it off, you hose it off, and it just ends up like on the walkway or on the sidewalk where it then just gets covered by ice and you don't really ever see it and you don't know it's there until there's some guy like, you know, the postal worker. Or some brother-in-law who hates you anyway and is just looking for a reason to be litigious on your ass. But he's just walking up to the front, and all you hear is like a slip and a crack. Kind of like that guy who faked the slip and a fall in the convenience store, except not slipping and faking. Actually falling and, you know,
cracking.
And, yeah, and then suddenly just, you know, one tibia that doesn't work. So just minimize the chances of this by, and having your, you know, the outside of your home taken care of and cleaned. And CJ's High Climbing can do all this and with a minimum of muss and fuss. And, you know, they can also give you a free estimate, actually, without even coming to your house sometimes, just by using Google Earth. And they can invoice you for it later, which means you don't have to take time off to be there yourself. Please tell me you heard about it here. 503-228-9278. Sometimes not even the postal worker. It's just like your dad who forgets that he's, you know, like 170 years old and he's just, you know, methuseling his way up the ladder. And then you're in the kitchen peeling potatoes and you just, you know, you just see his scarecrow-like figure plummeting to the earth in front of your home.
It could be your mom on her way home from the bowling alley.
That, true. I'd all stoned out of her gills. 503-228-9278, CJ's High Climbing. Let's do a couple more here and then we will wrap it up for this Wednesday.
Amid concerns that Jean-Luc Godard may harbor anti-Semitic views, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences is moving forward with plans to honor the filmmaker at its second annual Governor's Awards. Godard is to be honored alongside film historian and preservationist Kevin Brownlow, director-producer Francis Ford Coppola, and actor Eli Wallach at a private ceremony on November 13th.
They should sit him right next to Eli Wallach. Just, you know, for a goof, you know, just for grins.
See if anyone can tell the difference.
No, but isn't Eli Wallach is one of our Hebrew brethren, is he not?
Indeed.
See? So they, you know, it'd be like a little odd couple kind of a thing.
Although the Academy has received some complaints about Godard being selected to receive an honorary Oscar this year, Academy President Tom Chirac said that 79-year-old French-born director is being recognized solely for his artistic contributions, noting that the Academy has given awards to other people who have not had all stellar lifestyles. The Jewish Journal and the New York Times have published stories questioning Godard's feelings about Jews, citing examples in his films and in books about him that could be interpreted as anti-Semitic. Godard said last month that he does not plan to attend the ceremony, which is held at the Hollywood and Highland Complex adjacent to the Kodak Theater. And that's all the entertainment.
Entertainment news for Wednesday. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program comes up today at 1 o'clock, featuring Geek Watch, also Snuff Watch. We've got Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, who will give us a recap of everything that happened yesterday, including those races and measures still not decided, and Kelly Clark from Willamette Week as well. This is Don Taylor.
Animal control officers charged a 20-year-old Virginia woman with unlawful possession of wildlife after she was seen walking a fox wearing a skeleton costume in Reston Town Center around 10:30 a.m. on Halloween.
Who was wearing the skeleton costume in the story?
I believe the fox was wearing a skeleton costume.
Well, you got to give her points for being able to get a fox. I can't even get my dog into a costume. And it's not even a costume, it's just a hat. You know, and that's just, I mean, that's like an all-day affair.
Officers charged Elena Sitterson after it was determined she did not have the proper permits issued by the Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries.
Are we sure it was her idea? Foxes are cunning, after all. They're crafty.
Well, they said the Silver Cross fox, named Swiper, is 7 months old and, according to the owner, is neutered, litter box trained, and vaccinated for rabies. Swiper was seized by officers and will be held at an animal shelter until it's determined whether or not DGIF will issue required special permits.
Okay.
She was walking a fox that was wearing a skeleton costume.
It seems like there ought to be more jokes here than there are. You know, that's sort of like how there's energy within atoms that you can't quite access, even though you know it's there. It's like there's humor locked within the story.
That story, I thought it would be a good one to end with. I mean, fox, skeleton costume, that's hilarity. And it seems strangely anticlimactic.
All I'm coming up with is the Crazy Like a Fox show with Jack Warden from 1987.
Yeah. I got nothing.
All right. Well, on that note, we'll end this episode of Legion of News. We're so sorry. Thank you for joining us today at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget the program is available as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com, also at iTunes. Coming up next is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy at rickemerson.com, where you can be amused for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day, which you could steal from someone else, you know, like if you distracted him with a thing.
With
a fox and a skeleton or, you know, a red fox, you know, whatever.
Megan Fox.
Bud Fox.
I got nothing else.
Michael J. Fox. Pwned. At the news desk, it is
Foxy Brown.
Fox on the Run.
Fox and Socks.
Oh.
Foxes, starring Jodie Foster and Sherry Curry.
All right, look over there. Legion of News comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk is Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show comes up next at rickemerson.com. We will see you again tomorrow for another exciting installment of Legion of News. Thank you for listening. Have a satisfying Wednesday, won't you please?